Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
So, we'll open up the phone lines now for this morning's, a conversation with Fevzi Turkup, our gadget detective. If you've got any issues with a gadget at home, this is the man that can hopefully solve them for you, whether it's a computer issue or iPad or any other tablet issue or phone issue, smartphone issue or... which other issues? TV, radio, do you do them all?
Yeah, washing machines, tumble dryers, you know.
We did do a washing machine once, and I thought you rose to the challenge adequately. I wouldn't say I would trust my washing machine with you.
Well, I feel damned by faint praise. I rose to it adequately, but that's fine. That's okay.
It wasn't damning, but I've got a problem with my computer, you know, and I suppose... I should have let other listeners take up. Do you mind me asking this very quick question?
Yep, go ahead, please.
Basically, my computer, I've got two problems. It'll probably be three by the time I finish this conversation. But my computer suddenly seems to act as if, you know, it's got a virus or something, because when I try to sort of, when I try to click into any page anywhere, mm-hmm. it looks as if it's going to my download, if you see what I mean. So I'll have, let's say, you know, search engine open, mm-hmm. and I'll try and search a page or even paste a page in to the website browser thing, the link, the website, the URL mm-hmm. link thing, and then I'll click on it. So instead of going and opening up the page, I see the icon, which is a download thing, activate, but it doesn't really download, if you see what I mean. So I can't go and retrieve it from my download folder at all.
Does that happen irrespective of which browser you use? Have you tried it with another browser?
I tried it with different, yeah.
And it's doing the same thing?
Yeah, it's doing the same thing. Am I in trouble?
I think there are various possible explanations for that. I think it is worth... running a full system scan to check to see if you've got anything.
What is that? What is a full system scan?
So a full system scan is, where one has antivirus or security software on there, it's a scan of, as far as the software is capable, a scan of everything that's on the system. Yeah. And the way that it's best done, assuming that you're using a Windows machine, is to do it in what's called safe mode, which means that you start the machine up into a mode where it's running the sort of most basic version of your Windows that it can. It's a sort of diagnostic system. And the way you do that is you switch it on, you hit the F8 key repeatedly.
Don't talk to me about that language, because I use the half-eaten fruit version.
The half-eaten fruit version, and it happens with more than one browser. Are you running the latest version of the operating system?
Yeah. I'm in trouble, aren't I? Just tell me I'm in trouble.
You're not necessarily in trouble, and actually it's less likely to be a virus on an Apple Mac, although they still do get them. I would check to see that you really do have the latest version to make sure there's no bugs in both the operating system and the browsers that you're using. Beyond that, I would, and I hate to say this to you, but I would speak to Apple about it, because the problem is the fact that it's happening on more than one browser, i.e. not just Apple's browser, suggests that it's something system-wide, and that's rather worrying. There's no point. It's not going to be going into the settings of the browser itself. There may be settings within the operating system itself that can help you, but did the problem coincide with any changes on your system that you're aware of?
No, it just
was
came.
It after you downloaded a piece of software or
no,
went
no,
to a particular web page?
I haven't downloaded anything. I mean, I can't guarantee that a particular web page didn't have a virus on it, but I didn't go to any web page I wouldn't have gone to otherwise.
I think it's worth running the malware check, because even on the Apple, because a piece of malware could affect different browsers. It can be programmed to affect different browsers, so it could be doing that. Have you noticed any slowing of the machine or instability?
Not really.
And the hard drive or the SSD, is it accessing more than...
Don't use that kind of language with me. Hard drive, I'm just about to get my head around that.
So the
SSD.
So the solid state drive. Which replaced the hard drive, which is infinitely faster, has no moving parts, but can still house an infection. I would run... antivirus on there. You should be running antivirus even on a Mac. I would do a full system scan. Ignore what I said about F8, but run a full system scan. If that doesn't turn it up, then speak to Apple, because it seems to be a system-wide problem.
I've taken more of your time than I intended. 0500 909 693. I'm sure you all have questions of your own for Fevzi. Don't let me hog the limelight, as it were. Neil in Blackburn is with us. Good morning, Neil.
Oh, good morning, Lord Dutton. Good morning, Sir Fabsy.
Good morning.
I'm not sure about that, but I'll accept it graciously.
Oh, I don't know. I quite like it. Thank you so much.
I hope Sir Fabsy does as well. My point was a couple of things. I have a Samsung S4, mobile phone, and it popped out of my pocket, and it landed on the kitchen floor, and it just a little crack on the top left. So now it's all green.
Yeah.
So I'm just asking, what is the best way and the cheapest way, as long as it's done correctly, to get it repaired?
Right. Well, the best way is not the cheapest way.
I like it the best way then.
Okay. So the best way is to take it to a Samsung authorized repairer, and if you speak to Samsung in the UK, they will point you in the right direction. You can get them to do it for you. It will be a chargeable repair, but there are also independent repairers. But they should be someone that's suggested to you in your area by Samsung. I don't think they have a list of repairers on their website, but if you ask them, I think that they will assist you. The cheapest way is to buy it off a well-known auction site, a replacement part, and try and do it yourself. But
I know which one you mean, Fevzi. No, I won't do that.
No, I mean it's not so much the problem of being sort of counterfeit parts and all of that. It's more that you're as likely to do more damage as you are to fix it without a problem. The problem with these things is the way that these screens are designed, they tend to be, well, it depends on the actual model, but if they have certain circuitry called a digitizer integrated into the screen, and you have to replace the whole lot, then that becomes quite an expensive repair. So that's, for example, the case with iPhones. In order to get it as slim as possible, they have the digitizer, which is a bit that interprets the touches on the screen and turns that into a position on the screen. If that circuitry is also built into the screen, it gets expensive.
How much would you think then, after your experience, how much with an authorised dealer then for an S4, obviously Samsung S4, to be replaced the screen?
It's hard to be accurate, but I don't suppose you'd get much change out of £70 or £80.
Oh yeah, that's what I was. That's what I've been thinking about. Something like that.
You have to take a view on it, because a new S4 would you can get it well a refurb one you can get for about 100. I think, and a new one for maybe about twice that. So you also have to. You also have to take a view as to, because even when you've done that, even if they were to warranty the repair for a month or three months, the rest of the device is still not warrantied, and there's nothing to stop anything else from going wrong with it, you can also take the view of just saving that and putting it towards a newer smartphone. And smartphone costs are dropping. So what you paid for a new S4, might be relatively high to a new device of a similar spec.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, it's like an S, well, they've gone up on now, the S, because I do like Samsung, the Androids. You've got the S5, S6, and the new S7. And what I can gather, what I've read about some. Is it the S6 is just as good as the S7?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if you stick with the older models, then eventually they stop being able to run the latest version of the Android operating system, and you start getting compatibility issues. And unless you're running something like an Android phone from Google, say one of their Nexus devices, then you're dependent on Samsung producing their version of the latest version of Android, because you know they put in all their programs and all that. And sometimes, even when the device, the phone, is capable of supporting the latest version of Android, Samsung may just make a decision just to cut it off and stop supporting it. Whereas with Google's Nexus phones, it has the benefit of running what's called stock or vanilla Android. That's to say, a plain Android with no other companies' bells and whistles of software added into it, which first of all means the software will run more smoothly and more stably, but also means it will probably have a longer useful life because you're not relying on third-party companies to update the software.
Neil, thanks a lot for the call. 0500 909 693. If you've got questions of a techie nature for Fevzi Turkup, our gadget detective, then pick up the phone and give him a call. This is Stuart in Annan, Fevzi, who says, I've downloaded CCleaner onto my Samsung Galaxy A3, but it didn't say that it was specifically for a mobile phone. Does that matter?
Well, yeah. I mean, the true version of CCleaner, which is a software program by Pirisoft, that's P-I-R-I-S-O-F-T, is an excellent program, and there's a free version which I've used for many years without issue. And what it does is it cleans up your computer, it gets rid of unnecessary files, cleans out more or less anything you want it to in terms of, you know, your browser history or anything else, and it frees up space and it keeps the computer running smoothly. Now, I have to say, be very careful, because I have seen applications called CCleaner on both iOS, which is Apple systems, and also on Android, that are nothing to do with Piriform, and some of them are some of them are prone to mislead. Whether or not that's the intention, one can speculate. But be very careful, because if it's not from Pirisoft, it's not really what you and I would know as CCleaner, and you'd have to speculate as to why someone would name their product with exactly the same name as a highly successful product on a PC.
This is from Eddie. My printer only prints blank pages from my email Yahoo account. All other print jobs from other programs are okay. Any ideas?
Okay, so I'm guessing that the Yahoo account is being operated from within a browser page. It is possible that the settings are telling it to print in a colour where you've got, for example, no ink left of that particular colour, or could even be setting it to print in white. That's less likely, but I have seen that happen. So it may just be the settings on the browser itself or the program that you're using to access it. Otherwise, it has to be something that's program specific, because it's clearly not an issue with the printer driver, because that works across the whole system. It's not an issue with the printer itself, because the printer won't be aware of what program things are coming from. So it has to be, I would say, something to do with the way that the software that you're using for your email is actually set up and what it's sending to the printer. So if it's within a browser, try it within a different browser, for example. If it's within a specific piece of software, make sure you've got the latest version of that software. But ultimately, it will be a function of what's being sent to the printer rather than the printer itself.
And this from our listener: my computer crashes about twice a week. Is there any way of telling whether this is caused by the hardware or software?
Well, the first thing that you should do, again, is to check for malware. That's to say, viruses, spyware, ransomware, anything like that, and that you run your antiviruses in the way that we've mentioned before. But in addition to an antivirus program, you can get other programs that search for malware, which isn't strictly a virus but could still cause these sorts of problems. So there's programs like Super Anti Spyware and Malware Bytes, bytes with a Y. Those you can install and have them installed at the same time as antivirus, because you know there's sometimes this issue, you shouldn't have more than one antivirus on the computer at a time as a rule of thumb, but these ones will sit happily on that. So you need to do check for that, because a piece of malware could easily destabilize a machine into crashing. Beyond that, when you get a crash, if you get, for example, if it's a Windows PC, you get what's called a BSOD, or a blue screen of death, and that's when you get a blue screen flash up with white writing. And if you get that and you can grab that screen or stop it from moving away, you can write down the error code and actually start searching for that and seeing what actually led to the crash. It's not, these codes are not in English, but if you search for the codes in Google or using another search engine, you can actually find out what went wrong, what program was running, what crashed, and that will give you a fair indication. Beyond that, for example, if you're talking about a Windows PC and again you start it up in safe mode, which is hitting that F8 key when you start it up, if it's still crashing in safe mode, then that would tend to rule out any of the programs that are installed other than Windows itself. It doesn't tell you strictly whether it's hardware or software, but if, for example, it stops crashing when you're in safe mode, then that may point to one of the programs that was installed after the machine was new, rather than hardware. Because if it was, say, let's say a faulty memory chip, which can often lead to crashes, then that will happen in safe mode as well.
Yeah. By the way, you've got a happy customer here. You remember Stuart in Annan's question about his sea cleaner?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's also texted in and said, it was Pirisoft, by the way. Thank you.
Good. Okay.
But Bill in Belfast has said, look, installed Piriform Sea Cleaner as recommended. I don't know if he's done that in the last few minutes. He says, superb. I now call my PC Lazarus. Do you get it?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I
so,
do.
Maybe two happy customers then.
Sea Cleaner, is a great bit of software. My tip for people installing Sea Cleaner is it's one of these pieces of software that exists in a free version and then a paid for version. You don't really need the paid for version. I'm a great believer in paying for software to get, you know, what you need running on your system. But actually, Sea Cleaner is an example of a piece of software that runs really well on the free version. No need to pay for it. And just be careful, because they do try and get you to buy it. You know, they try and do two things. They try and upgrade you, you know, and imply that you need it and you really don't. And the other thing is that they often try to install, third-party software that they're paid to encourage you to install. You know, they'll get a kickback per installation of that software. And often, as you're going through and installing not just Sea Cleaner but other free programs, often if you're not careful and don't look at the screens carefully as you progress through them, you will find that that by default, you know, a browser that you didn't want, for example, could be installed and made the default browser. And all sorts of things get installed that we don't necessarily want. So be aware of what you're doing and uncheck any other software that doesn't look like it's related to Sea Cleaner itself.
Okay, and I think this is in response to my question, my query about my own computer problems. One of our listeners anonymously says, on Mac, open disk utility, verify disk, verify permissions, repair permissions, then AV.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah. So then antivirus. So what excuse me. What our listener is saying is just effectively checking the integrity of the disk itself to make sure that nothing has become corrupted, and if it passes that, then run an antivirus. And that's perfectly good advice.
And that would be simple, yeah? Straightforward.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I mean,
even I could do it.
Just be careful when you get into disk utility, because, you know, there are various options in disk utility that could enable you to wipe the drive, for example. You don't want to do that.
I don't want to do that.
Just be a bit careful, and if you're not sure,
I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Well, that generally works, but failing that, if you're not sure, don't do it, and just go away and ask me or do some research.
I will call you. Jason,
you're welcome.
Jason in Cambridge, good morning.
Good morning.
Hiya, go ahead, you're through to Fevzy.
I've got the antivirus software on my computer,
has just it's a yearly thing, you know, postal restriction. It told me that I was running out of time. I redid it on the computer, yeah. And I paid the money, and they took the money out of my account, but they keep on telling me that I haven't renewed.
Yeah. Is it, without naming the brand, is it a well-known and reputable brand?
Oh, yeah, it's one of the biggest.
Okay, all right. Does it begin with an N?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. How did
and
I know that?
An N as well.
They do, they do sometimes have problems of this nature. They're not trying to rip you off, but sometimes, see, companies are that sell software through subscription are obsessed with trying to stop people from tweaking the installation so the subscription renews without you paying. You know, there's various sort of well-hidden software markers or data markers inside your computer that tell the software, you know, whether you've paid and whether your subscription's up to date. Sometimes what happens is you pay and those markers don't get updated, so you need to contact the supplier of that software.
And the supplier begins with N, ends with N, yeah?
So, I'm sorry?
The supplier begins with N, yeah?
I'm so sorry, I couldn't...
The people who get the supplier with N, yeah?
Yeah, the people who provided you with the software, the people who produce that software.
Oh, right, yeah,
You contact them and you tell them what's happened. If necessary, you provide them with proof of payment.
It was quite some time ago. I've been running without any protection for a while now.
Well, that you don't want to do. If you can't get this resolved quickly, then what I suggest you do is you use something like a free
download.
Yeah, if you've probably got access to something like Microsoft Security Essentials or its equivalent from Microsoft, and that's a good free tool.
Yeah.
The problem with all of this is that if you really are not well protected, the last thing you really want to be doing is surfing around the internet looking for free software. So if you've got software on a disk that you can install, so much the better. But I think the first order of business is shut the machine down, and then call the provider of the software, explain to them what's happened, and ask them to reset your subscription.
Yeah.
And explain to them, even though it happened some time ago, that you didn't get any of it. So they should be giving you a year from... tomorrow.
As I say, I mean, it ran out. I tried to do it twice, and they took the money twice and didn't. I've gone to service.
Right. So then the other thing is that you need to demand a refund as well.
Yeah, I mean, the first one could have been at least something like 6 months ago.
Yeah, well,
that shouldn't be a problem, should it?
No, because they will be able to tell, first of all, that they've had two payments. They'll be able to tell that the subscription period was not updated. I think in general they know that they've got an issue with this, and they will probably fix it for you without any argument. If they do argue, just mention that we've spoken on the radio and that we'll be talking again in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that always works, mate. Jason,
But I don't think you'll have a problem with it, Jason, to be honest.
Good luck.
They'll sort you out.
Good luck. What about this from Vaughan, who says, morning, Dr. Gadget. I've just got a new iPhone 5 SE. Is there a free security app for Apple?
There are free versions of various applications. So again, what you get is this, what they call the freemium model, where they'll give you a basic security software for free, and then if you want the additional functions, then you pay for it. Norton has a free version. And bear in mind, well, there's two types of free, by the way. There is free where it's reduce functionality, but it stays on there forever. But there's also a lot of the providers will do you 30 days for free, so it's fully functional for 30 days and you get to try it out. And actually, that's a great way of doing it, because you can go through, first of all, you can try all the different ones for free and work out which one works best for you. And also, if you do then decide to sign up, say, for a year subscription paid, you'll actually get 13 months, because you've got the first month free, and then you add the 12 months to that. There are free versions of Kaspersky for mobile. Symantec do a version of Norton for mobile. Those would be, I suggest, a good place to start. As a general rule of thumb, I think antivirus and security software is something worth paying for. And I know that, often, money is tight and we try and do things cheaply, but security software is probably the last place you really want to be cutting corners, particularly if you appreciate that, you know, most of us now use our smartphones and tablets as so much more than phones. They are effectively, you know, mobile computers on which we do our banking and our shopping, and we have all sorts of data on there that we wouldn't want to have stolen. And a good piece of security software is worth paying for, because it will, it can in many cases do a much better job of protecting you by giving you additional functionality.
There's not a problem he can't fix. Our gadget detective, Fevzi Turkulp, is with us this evening to answer any questions that you have on gadgets that are not going as they should do, whether it be phones or tellies or computers, etc., etc. Rick in Colchester is with us. Fevzi, good morning, Rick.
Morning, Don. Morning, Fevzi.
Morning, Rick.
Go ahead.
Hi. I've got a bit of a problem with my iPhone 6S. I only got it September last year, and the last week or so, whether it's fully charged or 70% battery, occasionally it'll just turn itself off. I'll try and turn it back on, and it'll say it's got no battery. I'll plug it back in, and then it'll turn itself back on and be back on whatever charge it was when it turned itself off.
Okay, so the battery's not really discharging in the way that the original problem would have suggested. Okay, there are two possibilities here. One is that it's a glitch with the iOS operating system, there are known problems that can give rise to that, but equally there are hardware problems that can give rise to the same symptoms that you've experienced. So Rick, you said you got it last September, so you're coming up to the end of the first year. The important thing to do is go through to Apple straight away and flag the problem with them. You can certainly ask them for a solution, and you know they can run a remote diagnostic on your iPhone if you allow them to. They can actually run a diagnostic without you having to go into an Apple store and make a Genius Bar appointment or anything like that. So I'd suggest you allow them to run a remote diagnostic on it to see what's what. It may be that they will advise you to make some changes to the software installation, in which case, if that works, all well and good. But you know, just put them on notice that whatever advice you take, if the problem doesn't resolve, then you will be treating it as a warranty issue. So under more recent consumer law, we now have to allow companies a chance to fix problems, but if they don't fix it on the first attempt, we do have rights of rejection now as well. So without going too much into the consumer side, it's just important to log with them that there is a problem, get a reference for the call, get their name and department who you've spoken to, so that if there's ever a query, if let's say comes late September you're still struggling with the same problem, you don't want them telling you it's out of warranty. So the fact that you've logged it with them means that it should be dealt with as a warranty issue. If their diagnostics point to a hardware problem, then they'll invite you to return the phone. If the software suggestions they make to you don't work, they may invite you to go into an Apple store or send it in and allow them to have a fix of it. Sometimes when you go into Apple stores, by the way, just so that you've got this in mind, sometimes they can fix them there and then. Sometimes they'll say, you know, it's a problem but not covered by the warranty and you have to pay for it, or they may offer to pay some of it. But another option that they sometimes give you, and particularly if you tell them, look, you know, you can't be without the phone, is they don't always do this, but they can take your phone and offer you a new one, and you might have to pay towards a new one or something like that. Now, you said it's a 6S, yes?
Yeah, so I got it like the week it came out, so it was it was brand new. I think it's September they released them, or October.
And the sevens are probably due out around about this September as well. So that's also something to bear in mind in terms of.
They might be able to switch it at the same time.
Yeah, but I would don't try and time it till September in order to achieve that, because it's cutting it too fine. Sorry, Rick. Carry on.
The only other thing I was concerned about is I have got a slight crack in the screen. I was worried that obviously if I return it to them, they'll say, well, you've got your crack in your screen. You know, that's not covered under warranty. Whereas I don't know if they'll make me pay for that and obviously have it fixed at the same time.
No, unless they determine that the crack in the screen is a contributory factor to the problem that you're complaining of, it should be possible to deal with the problem that you want fixed whilst leaving the cracked screen there. But again, that might inform your decision about, you know, if it comes to spending money on this, how much money you want to spend on it. Because there is also a market for iPhones with cracked screens. So sometimes, you know, you can sell it as is. But hopefully this is an unconnected problem, and it's one that they will resolve either through a software settings or a hardware repair that they will pay for. Just be upfront with them about it. You know, just you know, be friendly. Give them as much information as you can. Don't go in there, you know, shouting your rights, because Apple tend to be. Well, you know, you can do that if all else fails, but generally with good companies, it doesn't tend to come to that. So they will try and help you, and as long as you're not trying to pull the wool over their eyes, and you know, they'll generally be sympathetic. You can make Genius Bar appointments online, or when you're speaking to Apple Care, they can make it for you.
Okay, that's brilliant. Thank you very much.
All right. Cheers,
thank
Rick.
Thank you, Rick. Yeah, well done. Thanks for the call. 0500 909 693. If you've got any questions for our gadget detective this morning, then do pick up the phone and give him a call directly. And this one, I said we were going to go back in time a little way, and you know how much people love their gadgets from a certain era. And there are many times when we feel, well, why did they ever bring out a new version of our favourite phone or our favourite software and so on and so forth? Well, Jules in Kilburn feels me, because he says, I have an old but great Mac Pro from 2009. He's talking about the MacBook Pro, isn't he? The laptop?
No, not necessarily. The Mac Pro, the old Mac Pros are the ones they call cheese grater designs. They're those big aluminium towers with the holes in the side that made them look a bit like cheese graters. And they were professional desktop or floor standing tower units. And they were, you know, for their day, very, very powerful. And they were used by, you know, creative professionals typically. They're very expensive.
Oh, gosh.
So, but I'm just wondering if that would have been one of the ones with an Intel processor in them that made them, you know, compatible with, you know, able to run Windows as well, or whether it was one of the older series of processors.
Oh, he doesn't say.
Well,
but it's from 2009, and with OS X, he says, OS X 10.6.8.
Yeah.
And recently, every week or so, the USB 2.0 ports, all of them, start working. I won't recognize any keyboard, mouse, external drives or anything. Just start working.
Yeah.
And all works okay after a reboot, and it happens again a week or two later. So every week or two, everything just stops working.
Yeah. So it sounds like it may be a driver issue. And what I mean by that is computers are like Meccano sets. They've got all sorts of disparate parts bolted together, and Apple is less like that than many in the sense that they at least control what hardware goes into a computer. But still, you know, Apple don't make the parts that go in to make the computer. They design the computer, and they make sure that the various parts are compatible as far as it's possible. But even so, you get what are called software driver problems. So for any individual part of that Meccano set to identify itself to the operating system, in this case OS X, OS X, you need a software driver, and the USB ports are no exception to that. So there's a piece of software running on that computer that understands the circuitry of those USB ports and acts as a bridge between the USB ports and the operating system. Now, what sounds like may have happened is that there may be a problem with that software driver. It could have become corrupted or damaged in some way. So you need to reinstall that driver. You need to also make sure that you've got the latest version of the driver for your particular setup, because it could always be that there was a bug that was then fixed later on. I suspect it's not so much a bug as a corruption, and therefore reinstating the driver will probably solve the problem. It is possible that there's a hardware problem, but in my view, it's much more likely to be a software driver issue.
So he doesn't have to get rid of his beloved MacBook.
No. I mean, these are great, and you know, they are classic design. I mean, I've seen people make coffee tables out of them, where they take two Mac Pros, as I say, because they're about, if you imagine a tower computer, so it's about sort of 2.5 feet tall, and you get two of them and you put a nice glass tabletop on it. They're kind of sort of geek chic, I think you'd describe it as.
Well, I wouldn't describe it as
well,
that.
Well, I would.
You can.
Yeah, no, yeah. I can. And geek failing chic. That, put it in the kitchen and grate your cheek. No, don't do that.
Yeah, great to have a text like that. Anyway, it takes me back, yeah. Okay, lots more texts to get through as well. Rattle through. 0500 909 693. We'll take some more calls very shortly. But Kevin in Birmingham says, I have a new computer but don't have Microsoft Office on it. Instead, use open source software. When I receive an email with a spreadsheet, I'm unable to open the attachment.
So what's happening here is a piece of software is being used that can open Word files and spreadsheets and so forth, and that's normally fine. What you need to do is make sure that the default association for that file type, so the file type will be .xls or docs.xlsx, that's the file type. Now, what you need to do in your computer is say, whenever I try and open a .xls file, for example, make sure it's opened by, you know, OpenOffice or LibertyOffice or whatever the free version of Office is that you're running. If you associate the file type with that, then you don't have to first go into the Office program and open it from within that. You can double click it as an attachment or on your desktop or wherever the file appears. When you double click it, it will fire up the version of Office that you're using to do that. So it's to do with the file associations. You need to associate the file type with the right program.
Okay, I did say we'd take a call, but this is virtually a call from Stan in Glasgow, who's driving, so he can't talk to us directly, but he wants to know, what is Tray App? And how does he get rid of it on his laptop?
How's that spelt?
Tray App. He spells it T-R-A-Y.
Is it one word or two?
Well, he's put it as two words.
And what's this running on? Sorry, I didn't catch.
No, on his laptop. That's all I've got. I haven't got enough information, Stan.
I think it's a process that's running. I think it's a process that runs in Windows. I think we would have to actually just do a bit of research to see what it is. I suspect it might, don't take me at my word on this, but I suspect it might be the part of the Windows operating system that operates the tray in Windows is, you know, in the bottom right-hand corner where programs that you've got running either actively or in the background appear, and it tells you that they're running. So, for example, you might see a little icon in the bottom right-hand corner of a window setup for your for your printer or for your antivirus or whatever. And the Tray App, I believe, and could be wrong, but you know, educated guess, the Tray App is the app that controls what is displayed and how it's displayed on the screen. So you would find that it should fire up as you fire up Windows. Mm. So that's my best guess.
Educated guess.
Isn't it? Yeah, I'm sort of more than 50% sure that's right, but I don't want to claim 100% on that. But a quick search on Google will tell us that, and I'll do that during the remaining minutes just to make sure I haven't given a wrong steer.
Helen in Halifax says, I'm sorry if I've missed the answer previously. Alas, I'd not noticed that my N security had lapsed. N, you know what N stands for, of
yes.
course. Security had lapsed, and a week or so ago, I suddenly got a black background screen and a message saying, my copy of Microsoft is not genuine. We tried resetting the computer for a few days earlier, but it did not clear. A couple of days ago, we received a phone call from, quote unquote, a company acting on behalf of Microsoft. knowing that we have a problem. We gave them no information and recognized the call as a hoax, dangerous, and hung up. But we were concerned that either it was a major coincidence or that the virus has allowed information to be accessed from the computer. We've unplugged it from the internet and are not sure. What do we do next?
Okay, so quite right to tell these beggars to get lost because they're clearly dishonest people. I'm trying to choose my words carefully. They're clearly dishonest people. They're one of the few groups of people that I will actively swear at when they trouble me.
But not on air.
No, not on air. But I do take the time to just give them, you know, just invite them to think about their life choices. Put it that way. Because I think what they do is disgusting, and they prey on vulnerable people, and it really does disgust me that this goes on. And unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of this. It could be a coincidence. Are you right to get rid of them? And anyone who gets a phone call from anyone claiming to be from Microsoft or Apple or your internet service provider or BT or whatever, they're almost certainly lying to you, and they should be treated with that disdain. If they're genuine, tell them to send you an email. If they ask you for the email address, point out that they should have that information already. Right. So beyond that, as for your version of Windows not being genuine, that can be a genuine message. Microsoft's operating systems do sometimes produce that message, not only when it's a pirated version of Windows, but sometimes when things go wrong with Windows. And for that, it is worth speaking to Microsoft about. There is a number that you can ring that where you would have to, you know, when you upgrade your computer and it doesn't think you've got the license and so forth, it will invite you to ring a number. You can ring a number and get past their automated system and speak to them about it because, you know, clearly, you know, I'm assuming that your Windows is genuine and then that's a problem. Now, that could be, you know, a virus or something putting up that message, in which case, you know, scan and make sure that it isn't. But if it isn't and the message persists, then the best thing to do is speak to Microsoft and take advice from them and notify them that actually, no, this is a genuine installation. That's the best advice I can give you. Really, I mean, what we're seeing here is that a lot of the advice comes back to having good security software and running it you know, habitually, and you can set it to run automatically, not just to catch problems that, you know, as they try and infiltrate. But if anything gets past your system, that doesn't mean you can't scan for it and remove it. And that's really the advice that I would give people. You know, I was reading a report today by the National Crime Agency in the UK, and they were basically saying that we're losing the war against malware and cyber crime, because these people are smarter and are often better funded. And I think the turning point in this battle, as it were, is the invention of something called ransomware. So ransomware came about, I think, a little over 2 years ago, and there was a first piece of software called CryptoLocker, and it was a piece of software that would sneak onto your system and then encode, scramble all of your prized data, all your documents, all your photos, anything that wasn't the operating system would be scrambled. And then when it finished scrambling it or encrypting it, it would then ransom it back to you and say, if you ever want to use or have access to those again, you have to pay so many bitcoins, which is typically a few hundred pounds, more since our currency dropped, ironically. That proved highly profitable, that approach, unfortunately, ransoming people's beloved photos and, you know, the script that they've been working on for 2 years or whatever it is, ransoming it back to them because people didn't have adequate backups. And because still people don't have adequate backups, there's a lot more ransomware out there. You know, there's Son of CryptoLocker and so much more. And because of that, they were able to reinvest that money into some of these people even have call centers with foreign language speakers on it so that they can extort money from people all over the world. So,
I just want to bring in Sandra in Carmarthenshire into the conversation, otherwise, we're going to lose her.
Oh, sorry, Sandra.
Good morning.
It's okay, I'm still here. Thank you.
Great. You've got a question for Fosie. Go ahead.
I have, thanks. I'm extremely electromagnetic sensitive, and I'm actually on laptop number 12 now, unsuccessfully, so I haven't been able to use a computer of any description or laptop or anything at home for like over 18 months, and I just wondered if you had any ideas of the way forward at all for me.
Well, it's difficult because we live in a world which is full of what's loosely called electro smog, and we can't control it. You know, our neighbours will use Wi-Fi even if we don't. Our cordless phones, if you use cordless phones, there are one or two brands that I could recommend to you that would help reduce that. Obviously, as far as your computer is concerned, try and use a wired internet connection everywhere where you need data.
It's literally finding the type of laptop that I can use. So I literally can't find, a laptop that I don't react to. I live very rurally in Wales, so we don't have any mobile reception here.
No.
And things like that. So I'm not
how are you connecting to the internet, Sandra? Are you connecting via Wi-Fi? Are you connecting via 4G?
No, not at all. So it's by an Ethernet. Is it an Ethernet cable with machines that don't actually have physical Wi-Fi switches on them?
Okay.
So if they do, then that's switched off, and then making sure it's switched off actually in the machine, but preferably with ones that just, totally disabling it, and then always by a router and the old-fashioned connection that we have to put back in the telephone box. BT don't do them anymore. And
What is it that you think is disturbing you? Do you think it is that the laptop is still generating data, wireless data signals such as Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, or do you think it is just the innate operation of the processor and circuitry generating low-level electromagnetic fields? Do you have a sense of what's
up? Probably the laptop. I mean, I did have one that was reactions to, but not really, really severe ones. I mean, still unpleasant ones.
Mm. Do you react to a Bluetooth signal?
Yes.
Even a Bluetooth, okay.
Yeah.
Sandra, do you mind asking how it affects you, this electromagnetic sensitivity of yours?
No, that'd be fine. So it just makes me feel incredibly unwell, very disorientated, swollen glands, throat swelling and constriction, can be facial swelling. And the most symptoms are, extreme exhaustion and agitation and just incredibly sick. But the main thing is, in the front of my chest, in the sternum area, there's an absolutely intolerable pain and sensation in the back and then in the shoulder. I mean, I haven't ever experienced radiation burns, but that's the only way that I can describe it, is like radiation burns.
Okay.
So after a couple of minutes, I'm actually inconsolable. It will lead to collapse.
So
I think there are some medical issues there that you should seek advice about and try and get to the bottom of what you could safely use and how.
Which I have been for like 17 years.
I'm sure. And I mean, I can tell you, for example, I don't have anything like what you have, but I can detect a Wi-Fi signal because my eyes start stinging. So, I'm aware that, wireless communications can have effects on our bodies, and I can accept that people will have more severe effects.
What about solutions?
In terms of solutions, all you can really do is try and remember that the inverse square law is your friend, and that's to say that if you double the distance between you and the source of electromagnetic radiation, you quarter its field strength. If you treble it, it's 1/9. If you quadruple the distance, it's 1/16. So the further away you can get away from the source, the better. So you mentioned a laptop. I would tend to say, okay, run a keyboard with a long cable, with a computer that's over the other side of the room, have a large screen that you can view from the other side of the room, and try and deal with it with long wires and large screens. And I know that sounds a bit strange, but in the interest of trying to put a distance between you and the source, that's the best way of doing it.
Hopefully that will solve it, Sandra. I certainly hope so. Fevzi, gosh, we've come to the end of our conversation, really, tonight. Just a very quick question. My poor dad, who ain't feeling too brilliantly, I've had to go to his house and take all his computing equipment, but of course I don't have the passwords. Am I stuffed, or is there a way that I can...
If it's Windows, there are ways around it.
If it's not Windows?
Again, there are ways around it, but you may lose the data that's on it. So,
right, okay. I don't mind losing the data that's on it.
You can certainly reinstate the operating system when that would effectively wipe the machine.
I'm going to call you.
Okay.
Yeah, look forward to it. Breakfast is on you, by the way.
Okay.
Yet again.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.